Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true here on this program that airs on Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. We stream live at richarddugan.com, and the podcasts are available at the radio show's page of richarddugan.com, as well as SoundCloud and iTunes. We're on Facebook, and we're on Twitter, so we're all connected. How connected? I don't know, but one of these days, maybe we will find out. I am very excited about today's program because it is a program where we are going to have a return guest to our program, and it's been, as I shared off air, it's been 9 years. 2009 was the last time we had Noah Benchia in the studio. And Noah, I want to thank you, first of all, so much for joining us again, and apologize for not having you on sooner, because you have a lot to say and a lot to share. And that's one of the reasons why we have you on the program today.
Thank you, Richard. Thank you.
And let our listeners know that you're one of, and this is interesting, one of North America's, as opposed to the Americas or Europe or what have you. But anyway, a most respected and beloved poet, philosophers, also a Pulitzer Prize nominee, international best-selling author of 26 books translated in 18 languages. And you're a scholar, you're a theologian, which that right there, just the theologian part, I could sit and talk with you for hours about a wide variety of different things. One of the things I want to start out with first, because I've always found this interesting, can you define for us the meanings of the three parts? Well, it's actually two, Noah and Benchia. Benchia sounds to me, is it Hebrew?
It is. Okay. The name Noah, as you might suspect, comes from the Hebrew, and it means to comfort, because Noah was a comfort to the planet in the deluge when the planet...
During the flood.
During the flood.
Yeah.
And Benchia means son of Isaiah. So my name is Noah, son of Isaiah.
And it's interesting because, and I've had some wonderful guests in the form of rabbis, and I've always loved talking with them because of the extensive study that they've gone through. You're a theologian, which is a little, it's similar, but it's different, obviously. What's the biggest difference between the two, being a rabbi as opposed to, in this case, a theologian?
I remember a number of years back when I was asked to address a couple of different rabbinic assemblies, and during that time, one of the rabbis stood up and said, let me ask you a question. With this information you have and this insight, why didn't you become a rabbi? And before I could respond, another rabbi stood up and said, are you crazy? That would have killed him. You know, a rabbi means to be a teacher, and I'd certainly like to think that there is an aspect of my life which is about teaching. The central theme of my life is to be a source of strength to others. For me, the people of all faiths are of one faith if their religion is kindness. They asked the Dalai Lama one time if he was a Buddhist. He said, I am Buddhist, but my religion is kindness. I think the older I get, two things strike me. One, I'm no longer young enough to know everything. And two, I think that the issue of faith and prayer is deeply relevant in one's life. There may be people who would ascribe it from time to time who call me a rabbi as a teacher of sort. I don't probably think too much time about either the poet, the philosopher, or the rabbi part, because when I sit down to work, somebody who does what I do gets to sit by himself for several hours every day in a small room. The first thing I'm trying to do is get outside of myself, write something wiser than me. So if I'm busy thinking about what I am or what I'm not, I'm confused and off target.
Now, at one time, and this we talked about in the interview 9 years ago, you were published on Starbucks coffee cups.
Yeah, it's one of those great stories, how that roundabout, and I share that with you only because people sometimes think that I was very operative and manipulative and putting a relationship together. And I can assure you, nothing could be further from the truth. I remember years ago when I first realized what I was embarking on as a love affair in the work notion of my life. And I've long thought that there is love and work in life. If you're lucky, you you have work you love. If you're wise, you'll work at love. So Jeff Brotman, who recently passed away in this past fall, really good guy. He was the chairman of Costco. He one time told me that, Noah, I'm paying you the ultimate tribute. I bought Jacob the Baker your book, and I paid retail for it from the chairman of Costco. He, in turn, as it turned out, as I later discovered, when there was an article about Howard Schultz, the chairman of Starbucks in Success magazine, and they asked Howard how he had the wisdom and the strength to build a company of this scope. And he said that Jeff Brotman, the chairman of Costco, was on his board of directors, gave him a book called Jacob the Baker by Noah Ben Shea. And this book had transformed his life, and he was reading it to many of the senior management. Subsequently, Howard and I got to know each other. And at one point, Starbucks was taking 18 American intellectuals and authors and putting a thought of theirs on a Starbucks coffee cup. I used to think when I first started writing, I never had to worry about selling out. There was no one buying. I certainly never envisioned there was no Starbucks. So the idea that a thought of yours was going to be on 30 million Starbucks coffee cups was quite outside the realm. That did happen. What was particularly relevant to me was that the thought that they chose was taken from a weekly column I wrote for about 5 years for a group of New York Times papers, including the paper here in Santa Barbara when it was owned by the New York Times. And I'd written a column called, my column was Noah's Window, and the particular piece was, what you want, remember this, my children, what you want your children to remember when you're not around to remind them. And the thought that they took, the senior VP of marketing was a woman at Costco, at Starbucks, and she chose this line, do not kiss your children so they will kiss you back, but so they will kiss their children and their children's children. Mm. And indeed I parked that idea in 30 million people's minds, I am forever grateful to be blessed to do that work.
And I tell you what, over the years that I've actually frequented Starbucks, and the controversy that always seems to erupt around the holidays over the color of the cup, that I don't know how people get so enamored over that. I would much rather have your wise sayings, as it were, on the cups than the controversy over the silly color of the cup or designs or this or that or the other. That's really silly. I'm curious about a couple, three things. But first of all, I want you to introduce to us, you actually brought a guest with you, who is sitting right next to you.
I do. I'm going to ask this guest to hold silent until the end of the conversation, if I might, Richard.
Absolutely.
Okay. But he will speak for us.
But you also you mentioned the book, Jacob the Baker.
Yes.
But you also have Jacob the Baker bread that is sold at Costco, or is it still being sold there?
They introduced Jacob the Baker bread at a number of the Costco warehouses in the last quarter of the previous year, and they will be reintroducing another Jacob the Baker bread, which I'm forbidden for telling you yet quite what that the nature of this, but that's going to come back into Costco's. And the senior people at Costco were really great. When they called me and talked to me about this, they said, you know, people always come to us and talk about how we can make money, but we're Costco. We know mm-hmm. how to make money.
Yeah.
When we invited you in with Jacob the Baker bread, you reminded us that we could make a difference. You reminded us in your line of all the things you can make in life. Why not make a difference? So I'm very touched to have this program with them, the Jacob the Baker bread and the story of Jacob the Baker on the back of the package. So we're looking forward to this being an ally in people's lives.
And if I might ask, what makes this bread different from other breads we might find at Costco or anyplace else for that matter?
Well, I doing everything I can to resist the first question of the four questions on Passover, that every family is manashtana halal azami kol halaylo. Why is this night different from all other nights? Why is this bread different from any other bread? I will leave that in the mouth of the consumer, if you would. It does tell the story of Jacob the Baker on the back of the bread.
Mm-hmm.
The story does reach out and connect with people with ideas that I think make a difference in people's lives. The people who are making the bread, a combination of them and the folks at Costco, because this is baked off at Costco, fresh every day, are really working hard. There's some really incredibly talented people, bakers, that even this Jacob the Baker worked with to get this bread to be very, very special. And so we're excited about it. I look forward to that being a reality, and you'll be able to find Jacob the Baker bread at Costco soon.
I'll be looking for it. And I got to tell you, fresh bread is always the best.
It is indeed. The Talmud teaches us that, Jews hold the Torah, the five books of Moses, and that's the centerpiece of the theology. And there's a line that says, "No, ain Torah, no bread, no Torah." Right? Mm. Bread is. I always have to revert back to the Yiddish wit that says only people with bread worry about butter.
So, I hadn't thought about it that way, but okay, you're right. It's
great bread is, yeah. And you know, one of the reasons when I witnessed these Jacob the Book series, and I have a new Jacob the Baker book that's going to be coming out in about a month from now that I'd been working on for 5 years. It was what I had learned or relearned over the last 20 years, thought I knew and knew yet again. And I'm very excited. The book is called We Are All Jacob's Children. So that's going to be up on Amazon in about a month and a half. And I'm very excited by this book. What I was not prepared for, nor was the Random House initially published the Jacob the Baker books, what they suspected is the book would find a connection in Los Angeles and New York because I was an intellectual and I talked quickly and the stories are supposedly wise. What they were ill-prepared for was how this book resonated with people in the Midwest, in the Southeast, with evangelicals, with people who have value systems. And it just connected with people all over the world because I think the idea of a profoundly wise, humble, unknown baker in your community is something every community can connect with. Mm. A great example of this is one of the languages that no one saw coming is that Jacob the Baker, Jacob's Journey, and Jacob's Ladder are all three in the top 10 bestsellers in Korea and sold over a million copies in Korea as we knew it. So I'm looking forward to these ideas continuing to be an ally in other people's lives.
And who knows, maybe somebody's smuggling them across into the North.
Well, I could only pray for that too, in the sense, not because of the royalties, but because I would like to have something which brings us together again. That's no small thing in this life. That's what I'm here to do as I understand it.
Well, I tell you, on this, this happens to be Mother's Day weekend, and very excited about that and wishing my mother, who I had a chance to visit over Easter holiday, a wonderful Mother's Day. Both my parents are in their mid-late 80s and doing well. And yet at the same time, you know, I take a look at folks who are in the latter years of their lives, and they're faced with, especially if a spouse passes, they're faced with one aspect more than anything else, which of course sometimes precipitates their soon departure after their spouse, and that's the issue of loneliness. But we're all kind of suffering from that from time to time, aren't we? And this is one of the subjects that we want to talk about today, is this subject of loneliness.
I think it's a profoundly sad irony that by every study that's been made, the more connected we are still now lonelier than we've ever been before.
Mm-hmm.
There's a world of difference between an intellectual understanding and experiential understanding. Anybody can read How to Milk a Cow, but milking a cow is an entirely different trial. I think that we've there's a lot of energy that's put out in our daily lives to avoid the reality of each of our isolation in this life. I remind people that we are all alone, that every man dies in his own arms, and people get very, where they expected me to be more soothing than that. And I remind them that we are all alone, but we are all alone together.
Mm-hmm.
And that when you have the courage to face the isolation of your interior world, then you can be empathetic to the isolation in the interior world of the person next to you or the person you're passing on the street. It gives you an empathetic relationship that otherwise you don't have because you're busy trying to avoid that reality. Now, You know, at the end of the day, happiness is homemade. You got to make the peace that you make inside your own life.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people that trade on these two words, but they're very different. I talked that Jacob the baker was alone but not lonely, right? Mm. One of the issues in a relationship with another person is we are there to guard the solitude of the other. So if you're with a partner and they need to have their aloneness as you need to have your aloneness and befriend your aloneness as they have to befriend their aloneness, you have to be a guardian of that solitude for them as they have to be a guardian of that solitude for you. And that on this journey, if you get someone who could be good company with you on this journey, that is a blessing. But any blessing that brings you peace, anything that brings you peace is a blessing. But any blessing that does not bring you peace is no blessing. So you've got to I really take the time to honor your own aloneness and make that relationship with yourself and fall in love with yourself and be kind to yourself and be compassionate to yourself, because from that basis, you can be kind and compassionate and loving of others. And from loving and compassion and to others, you have the ability then to translate that into a relationship with the divine. Because a lot of people think that the relationship with God is a vertical relationship between them and something above them. But the first five commandments are between each of us and the divine, but the second five are between us and the people around us. So God says, thank you very much for loving me, but if you really want to love me, love the people around you. So now we think instead of a vertical relationship, we have a horizontal relationship. And then we realize that in order to be loving to the people around us, we have to be loving to ourselves. So the path ahead is the path within. From an interior perspective of appreciation and respect, you can have a horizontal appreciation of respect and appreciation. And from a horizontal appreciation, you can witness your relationship to yet the higher, to the divine in all of us.
Yeah. You know, I used to think that, and I would share this with people, I hear quite often on radio and television of people in maybe interview settings, they're very self-deprecating. They're always putting themselves down if they're not attacking somebody else. And
let me just say, too humble is half proud, huh? Let's be too humble is half proud. There's a great story I like to tell of a guy who was at church and the people mm-hmm. voted him most humble and they gave him a medal. The following Sunday, he wore the medal to church and they took it away from him, right? But what you're saying is yet another side of the issue. For about the last 10 years, I've been a national philosopher for people dealing with addiction and recovery all over the country. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm not in recovery, but addiction is emblematic of something else being wrong in your life that you're not addressing.
Right.
It's the basis of all dual diagnosis cures mm-hmm. that are in the process right now. One of the areas that plays into it is that people who are suffering from addiction or this false sense of humility, if you will, can be we're raised to think that beating yourself up is an act of character. There's no money in that. There's no money in beating yourself up as an act of character. It isn't. The difference is between being self-accountable and self-abusive. There's a very difference. If you tell you tell a child that he's a fool or she's a fool for long enough, you will be a prophet. Mm-hmm. If you beat yourself up about something because you did something that was stupid or wrong or a mistake, all you do is diminish your own notion of self, and then you don't have the courage to do something about it. Being self-abusive is not an act of character. Being self-accountable rather than self-abusive, that's the money.
Yeah.
That's the money play on this. If you want to change your life, if you want your life to get better.
Yeah. And I often tell people in that regard, saying, okay, would you speak the way you just spoke about yourself in that self-deprecating fashion, would you say that to and or about, say, your best friend or your mother or your brothers or sisters if you've got good relationships? And, of course, usually the answer is, well, no, I wouldn't.
No,
well, then
a lot,
why would you say that about the most important person in your life, you?
Because there are, your people are, again, you're off target. You think that, you know, narcissism doesn't mean that you love yourself so much. Mm-hmm. A narcissist is someone who thinks so little of themselves, has so little respect to themselves, that they always have to be in the promotion of themselves to convince themselves that they are special. The issue of telling somebody else that you're there for them, that you love them, that they're good people. The question isn't whether you offer that to them, but would you offer that to yourself? Because oftentimes we won't offer ourselves what we, just as you were postulating, we are more than willing to offer it to others. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't ring true. If you cannot be self-loving, you cannot be other-loving. It just works that way, mm-hmm. folks. Mm-hmm. So, and that is not... that's not a misguided notion. It's not an act of ego promotion. It's a sense of affirmation because, you have to have that at a foundational level.
Yeah.
Every architect will tell you that when you build the foundation of a building, you determine the height of that building. If your foundation, if your sense of self-worth and self-appreciation and self-life has no value, if your foundation is too shallow, if it doesn't have the tenets of depth to it, your structure will be shaky from the start.
And how about if you build your foundation on something that isn't really stable? And I think of the building in San Francisco. They built the thing all the way to the top, and now it's starting to lean. And I heard the solution that they've come up with, the engineering solution, is to shore up one side while the other side sinks so that it'll eventually straighten out. And I'm just sitting here going, I don't know, maybe you should just tear it down and start over again.
Well, yeah, I may be wrong, but I think it may have been in Indiana where they built the library, mm-hmm. and they forgot, when the engineers were building it, they forgot to weigh in the weight of the books
in the
library. And it's also, but to this point, whenever you build your foundation on something, it's shaking. Let's get real. We live on a little blue ball, mm-hmm. spinning in space at 1,060 miles an hour. That we don't know this has nothing to do with the fact of the matter. If people thought the world was flat, it had nothing to, Columbus didn't sail over the edge because some people thought the world was flat. Mm-hmm. If we don't recognize that we live on a planet spinning in space, if we do not realize that change is the only constant, then when you experience change, we think that we're living in a shaky experience. It is the change. It is that dynamic state of change, which is the only constancy that there is. Let me give you another example. There are no straight lines. There are no straight lines. If you step back from any straight line long enough, far enough, you will see a curve. Mm-hmm. And physicists will tell us that every line extended far enough in space turns back on itself. So let's not be confused that everything is going to be just the way we envision it's going to be. With everything, you know, but change is the only constant. All change is not progress. It's how do you respond, not react.
Mm-hmm.
Not react.
Right.
How do you respond, not react, to the change in your life? I'll give you a play out of this as a social malaise. The number one illness in the world is depression. The number one reason for depression is stress. The number one stress is people trying to be in charge of what is out of their control. You're not in charge of what the world delivers to your door. You are in charge of your response. Respond, don't react.
Mm. I read a book back in the 80s. It was mandatory reading by the manager of the station I was working for. It was called Who Moved the Cheese? Mm-hmm. And I read it cover to cover, and I went to my boss and I said, look, I don't have a problem with somebody moving the cheese, i.e. change. Just tell me that you're moving it. That's all. And of course, I'm still probably on the outs in that regard because I want to know that somebody's moving the cheese, as it were. But it's as you said, change is the only constant in the universe, and that's just, that's life.
I'll give you another example that we can all bear witness to. In a relationship, it's not unlike a tree. When you look at any tree of any size, any stature, you will find that there are some limbs that grow together and there are some limbs that grow apart.
Mm-hmm.
In Jacob's journey, this woman comes up to Jacob and says, Jacob, my husband's not the man he used to be. And this was not a Viagra question. She was just saying, he's not the man. So Jacob says, very interesting. Let me ask you, the question isn't whether he's not the man he used to be, but whether you're prepared to accept him for the man he might yet become. Now the woman took a step back. And then Jacob said, of course, you understand that your ability to accept him for who he might yet become requires you to accept yourself for who you might yet become. We are all standing on a little blue ball, spinning in space at 1,060 miles an hour. There is no mission accomplished. You can find your balance and lose your balance at any moment. You can have your terrible twos, your awful 22s, your, oh my gosh, 42s, and I never thought I'd be here, 82s, right? You can have it and heal it and get it and lose it, find your balance and lose it at any moment.
Yeah.
Welcome to the experience of being alive, right?
Yeah.
And that's what requires us to be accepting and appreciating of the stresses that change cause in all our life, because we're oftentimes addicted to what was instead of what will be. The best definition that I ever put together for neurosis is when we choose to do something which is negative but familiar over something which is healthy but new. We do something that no longer serves us, even if it did, perhaps it did once, but it does not serve you in this moment. You know, if you find your way through a dark forest in your life of information and come to a huge river, and by that river there's a boat, you get in that boat to help you cross over that river of understanding in life, and you get to the other side, and there now is a desert you have to go through. Well, you don't drag the boat with you through the desert, right? The boat got you across the river, got you to the next point. Now you, how are you going to carry on from there? That is the question in this lifetime. How do we proceed in this moment and the next moment? And, you know, the time is an orchard. Every moment is ripe with opportunity.
Absolutely.
Stay tuned, folks.
Absolutely. I have to say, though, the one exception to that rule would be if you were a Viking. I was watching the series, The Vikings, and they took their boats up over the mountains to the other side. That's the only exception to the rule. It's a whole different thing.
Yeah, no, that was a good play. But I'm not sure that had a long run for the Vikings.
No. I wouldn't want to do that on a regular basis.
No, and they had a flourish, and thank you very much. A very nice trip. Thank you very much.
They had their run, and now it's somebody else's turn. Absolutely.
Yeah.
When we come back from the break, we have two other subjects that we want to touch upon, but I want to remind our listeners that they can go to your website, and it is noahbenshea.com. That's NOAHBENSHEA.com. And you can find out, of course, about Jacob the Baker, the book, the bread, many of the other things, all of the 26 books. And by the way, when we met the last time, you had just produced a PBS special called The Journey to Greatness.
Right. I was invited to be the subject of it was from a book that Sage Publishing had done, The Journey to Greatness and How to Get There with Noah Benshea. Actually, I'm very touched by that and was honored. Now there is a company called Daily Ohm, dailyohm.com, which puts out ongoing programs that people are able to subscribe to online. And The Journey to Greatness with Noah Benshea is a new program that's going to be available on dailyohm.com probably in about 30 days.
Oh, terrific. That's fantastic.
I look at dailyohm.com and for The Journey to Greatness. It's coming up. It's 20 segments that I did live with, and it's video monologues with Noah talking about patience, faith, the things we need to get to greatness in our life.
We're going to talk a little bit about that, I think, too, when we get back. I'm Richard Doing. This is Tell Me Your Story. We're talking with Noah Benshea, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, and we are trying to give you choices and knowledge of those choices. You know, when I came up with that phrase some years ago, over 10, when we were starting to put this program together, some people didn't quite understand that. Well, I guess the best other phrase to go along with that is, you don't know what you don't know. And I have been probably one of the strongest advocates that I know of for education, aside from people who are involved in education, for everybody. Although I had one professor from a local community college who I posed that to, I said, everybody deserves an education, to which he said, no, because some people are just stupid. I thought, this is coming from a college professor? Please. If we don't know that there are other possibilities, or if we don't have the education to be able to put two pieces together to create a third new concept. I think of your example, for example, you talked about architects, and they will go to school and they will learn all of the basics about architecture. But then they will look around them and they will see, the only architect I can think of at the top of my head is Frank Lloyd Wright and the diverse number of buildings that he created. No two are exactly alike. And of course, I grew up in Arizona, where in Phoenix and Tempe, they have Grady Gamage Auditorium, which was one of his works. And so you get those basics down. You get the tools, you get the saw and the hammer and all these different tools, if you will, in your toolbox. And then you get all these different ideas and images in your head, and then you start to want to create from there. And usually it's going to be something that is brand new that no one ever came up with, because you have taken all of these different pieces, if you will. And that's what we put together on this program. We lay out this smorgasbord, this table, and we ask you to come to the table and take what resonates with you, what works for you. If it doesn't work for you, if you don't like it, don't take it. Leave it. Come back later. Maybe you might. Maybe after the opportunity of being exposed and experiencing some of, whether it's what Noah Benchi has talked to us about today, or even 9 years ago, or Greg Braden, or any of the other great people we've had on this program, you start to imagine the possibilities that had you not come to the table, you could have never imagined. And so that's kind of what we're trying to put together here, to make this a better place. And that's not to say that it's a terrible place now. It's a pretty darn fun place to be for the most part. And we just want to make it better for everybody. Your thoughts on that?
Well, clearly, we don't see the world as it is. We see the world as we are. Mm-hmm. And when we change, the world does. Mm-hmm. I think, let me share a story, if I might, that might be perspective. As somebody said to me, other people tell you stories to put you to sleep. No one tells you stories to wake you up. So imagine that there's a father taking his son to a huge parade that is passing through the town. And this is the parade of life. And the son is sitting on the father's shoulders, and the crowd pushes in on them from all sides. And the son sees, oh, father, you should, the colors, the sound, the light, you should see what I see. But the father can't see because he's crowded in by other people while he's there supporting his son. Mm-hmm. The son, and he's looking at what he can see, does not take the time to see that he is on the shoulders of those who have come before him. And that in this lifetime, we will sometimes need to play two, we will have two roles. One, to have the perspective of, oh, you could, if you could see what I see. And two, my responsibility to be a source of strength for you to be able to see, to grant you, and to remember to do that. Do not kiss your children so they will kiss you back, but so they will kiss their children and their children's children. I think that that is the dual responsibility of perspective. My grandfather, Jacob, said, a man learns and learns and dies a fool. You know, you heard me say earlier, I'm not young enough to know everything anymore. And I've heard myself say or write that my heart knows what my mind only thinks it knows. That is that that there is a intellectualization and experiential. No one can, the color red is an experience, right? An apple never, the word apple never grew on a tree, if you will.
Oh, okay.
You know, that, or if you will, in Jacob's world, it's the silence between the notes that makes the music. It's what we don't see sometimes, what is the absent sound. A lot of times, if you want to know what's missing in a relationship, find out when you go home and you can tell that your partner's upset about something. You say, what's wrong? She says nothing. And as soon as she says nothing or he says nothing, you know you got a big problem.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because nothing speaks louder than what people refuse to say to each other or won't hear in each other. Or what we won't listen to in ourselves, talking to ourselves. A lot of us get very busy, very surrounding ourselves with every distraction we can, so that we are not required to hear what we are in wisdom saying to ourselves. We make ourselves self-ignorant so that we don't have to hear the truth. We all decide the lies we want to believe. and the self-deceit that eventually becomes public deceit. So this is a huge issue of the learning that is necessary in this life, but it begins by being a willing student to yourself, looking inward to find what you might presume is outside, but you have to begin there. You have to, ground zero is in you. That's the place. Most of us do a great deal to try to avoid that perspective because, sometimes the only thing worse than a bad mirror is a good one.
Yeah. Well, it reminds me of a poem I read many years ago, the author's name Tiberius, and it has to do with the gods. They're getting a little concerned that man is starting to get to a point where he's going to understand where he stands in the cosmos, spiritually and so forth, metaphysically, and they are afraid that he will find the secret. And so they begin to debate as to where to hide the secret. We'll hide it on a mountaintop. No, he'll figure out how to climb the mountain. We'll bury it down in the depths of the ocean. No, he'll find a way to get there. We'll put it on this planet. We'll put it here. Finally, one of them pipes in and says, we'll hide it in their heart. They'll never look there. And every time you and any other guest says we need to go within, which is the simplest thing to do, I'm not saying easy, but it's the simplest thing, we still want to go outside and look around to try to find that which we're carrying with us the whole time.
Aristotle said that honesty is the portal to all wisdom. By all regard, Aristotle was a fairly bright guy. But if honesty is the portal to all wisdom, humility is the portal to all honesty. Mm. So the requirement to go within or they won't do it is because you have to quiet yourself to enter yourself. The first word in the Bible is in the beginning. That word in Hebrew is Bereshit, means in the beginning. It begins with the Hebrew letter Bet, which is the second letter in the alphabet, which is like our letter B, Aleph, Bet, Beta, mm-hmm. the alphabet. But the first letter in the alphabet, in the Hebrew alphabet, is the Aleph, and the Aleph is silent. So even before the beginning, it was the silence that was born. You have to be willing to make peace with that silence in your life, to enter that silence in order so that you can begin in the beginning of your... And finding that is a huge challenge because we oftentimes feel we don't know where to look. We don't know where we can find it.
Yeah.
And the question isn't worrying about... where you are to begin your prayer, but to where you are in you.
Mm-hmm.
Not where you are, but where you are in you.
Mm-hmm.
So if people are listening to this and thinking about trying to find a way that they can access prayer in their life, don't worry about where you are. Focus on where you are in you.
Mm. Well, let me ask you to define that. From your perspective, what is prayer? Which, by the way, is our second topic.
Yeah, well, a couple of things. Earlier today, you asked me to that I had brought a friend here, and so I'm going to respond to your question. I've brought a friend. About 7 or 8 years ago, a company that makes plush toys came to me, and they said they wanted to do a Noah Bear. And they said they wanted to make a bear that looks like Paddington the Bear, and they wanted me to write a one-minute message on a couple of topics like prayer and friendship, and then put it in this bear, in the bear. So when you squeeze the bear's paw, you hear Noah talking and the bear's mouth moving with a message. So I brought the Noah Prayer Bear that seems to have connected with several hundred thousand people already, and it's a one-minute message, and anybody who wants to find one at some point can just Google Noah Bear. You'll see the Noah Bear, and this is the Noah Prayer Bear. So I'm going to respond to your question, what is prayer? This is a message from Noah about what is prayer via the Noah Bear.
Okay.
Someone once asked me if I pray because it makes sense, and I said no. I don't pray because it makes sense. I pray because my life doesn't make sense without prayer. I pray to raise myself up and to keep going when I can't even seem to get going. In the middle of life's struggles, there inevitably comes a time in each of our lives when we collapse on the trail or in an office or even stuck in traffic. And prayer, I have found, is a path where there is none. Tears falling long enough can scar rocks. but tears falling on our cheeks can also cause us to bloom. And the wind in your face just might be God blowing you kisses. Your life is a gift. Prayer is a thank you note. So put your faith and not your fears in charge. And may you never forget that God is never so with you as when you feel alone. Peace and blessings.
Now, that's very nice. That is wonderful.
Thank you.
Congratulations on that. That's fantastic. It's interesting how
it's easier coming from a bear than hearing from me. As interesting as I may appear, nothing. I love this because it isn't a boy. It isn't a girl. It isn't a person of color. It isn't a person of this background. Mm-hmm. It's a bear.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So you get to say things without me being in the way, because inevitably I'm going to hear it.
And it reminds me of an experience that I had back in Phoenix, working for a station, and around the holidays we would do this campaign. It was called Toys for Joy, and for 10 years I got to play Santa Claus at the gathering the party that we would hold for underprivileged kids, and we'd give the toys to them. And one year, and this kind of goes to your point about that almost the necessity for the disconnect from yourself, and in this case, you, Noah, and having the bear as your spokesperson, so to speak.
The Noah bear,
The Noah bear. I was getting ready to leave to go change into civilian clothes, and this little girl walked up to me, and she handed me this stack of three or four Christmas cards, and they were hand-drawn with crayon. And I opened them. I thanked her for them, and I opened them up, and I was reading through them, and I remember the struggle that I had with being Santa Claus and having to somehow disconnect my ego, because these kids were responding to more the outfit I was wearing than the person inside. But when she gave me those cards, I was just touched to tears. I still have those cards, too.
I completely understand, my friend.
Yeah.
I completely understand. I can't tell you, I've gotten letters from people who have given the Noah prayer bear to people when their husbands in the hospital, and some have wanted the bear to be buried with them. Other have taken their husband's watch and put it on the bear after they passed. Somebody, I was down in Atlanta, and someone said that our minister was in the hospital, and someone gave him the Noah prayer bear, and the next Sunday he brought that bear to church, and that bear gave the sermon. You know, I just feel profoundly blessed to be a voice of something which is wiser than oneself. You know, that's...
Yeah, and I have to say, too, I was a Baha'i, member of the Baha'i faith for about a year and a half back in the 90s. And I remember one of the phrases from the founder that has stayed with me. I mean, a lot of them have, but this one in particular. And basically the phrase is, if you accept one of the messengers of God, you accept them all. If you reject one of them, you reject them all. And I would actually expand that to say, if you accept the message, or if you reject the message. Because the message, as you obviously through your education and your learning have come to understand, is basically the same throughout all of the wide and varied, I call them philosophies of the world down through the ages. Whether they're written or whether it's an oral tradition where they're passed down from generation to generation through what I like to refer to as the ancient wisdom teachings, it's all there for us in that respect.
In this time of such discord, of change, breeding so much insecurity, insecurity, fear on the inside is anger on the outside. Do any of us really doubt that people of all faiths are of one faith if their religion is kindness?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I have to say.
No,
they
I
ask
agree.
Her that yeah. one of the great thinkers said the three most important things in life to remember: number one, be kind; number two, be kind; number three, be kind. You know, and in the Talmud it says kindness is the highest wisdom. But there are two words for kindness in Hebrew. One of them is chesed, and the other one is rachamon, and it's rachamon that's used. And this is kindness means compassion. Compassion comes from the Latin meaning with passion. Compassion is caring with passion, being passionately caring. Small stories of caring are never small stories. A number of years back, I was a visiting professor of philosophy at UC San Francisco Medical School. And I remember one of the great, great doctors who was a colleague saying, "No one cares how much you know until they know how much you care."
Mm-hmm.
And counseling these young doctors, the most brilliant young doctors, don't just do something. Sit there. Take a moment with someone. Be there. Be quietly in their company, in their experience. A lot of us have said to other people, and have said to me at times when I'm giving a talk, that God doesn't give us more than we can bear.
Mm-hmm.
And I respond, be patient with that. Because sometimes life does give us more than we can bear. Sometimes we all have the opportunity to fold under the burdens that are placed on us. And no one needs my expectation of what they can bear in addition to what they have to bear. I want people to understand that if you need to fold and fall, that the human condition is frail in that. Let me give you a great story that honors that. If you looked in the pocket of a French nobleman in the 18th century, you would see two pocket watches. The reason you would see two pocket watches is because watches were inclined to run down, and when one wound down, you would use the other one to reset it. We are like those two watches. In our life, at some point, each of us is going to wind down. Each of us is going to have to stop running for the moment. Each of us is going to need to stop and be reset, and we're going to need the help of someone next to us to help us do that. And in case you become self-enthralled because you are someone who is helping someone else to rewind their watch or set themselves, rest assured, my friend, your turn will come.
Yeah.
Your turn will come.
Yeah. You know, you talked about narcissism and the ego and so forth, and I've been very blessed by the universe that anytime I get a little too big for my britches, the universe has ways of giving me my comeuppance and reminding me of not only my value, but also that I am not the only one here. I kind of took that position when I was having problems with people driving here in California and doing as I my expectations were stupid things. And someone said to me that really kind of put it into perspective, you know, that guy that just cut you off in the blue car up there, he did not get up this morning and say, let's get Richard. Okay. And on the one hand, it's not personal and that's great. But on the other hand, it's not personal and that's frustrating because he doesn't care enough.
No, I mean,
to think of me.
Two thoughts about that. One, people don't do things to you. They do things for them.
Yeah, right.
So if you personalize what they're doing as an attack on you, it's your ego's involvement in the moment about that experience. So you have to just step back and be patient with this for a second. And we all fall. We all fail because we're all frail. Knowing that we all fall, that we will all fail, that we are all frail, that we will all have that moment is what makes us blood brothers and sisters. We all bleed.
Exactly. And I used to think about that when it came to a lot of these different conflicts around the world. And as I've been growing up, there have been a lot of them. And I used to think, wait a minute, don't you understand that, you know, okay, you know, you're shooting or you're doing whatever, but we all bleed the same red blood. Might be different types, but it's still blood. And I keep thinking, isn't that enough to show that we're connected? But for some, it's not, you know. And
you know, we all have our resident blindness. And if you think about, my sense is that our work in this lifetime isn't what we do, but who we are. Mm. Our work in this lifetime is not what we do, but who we are. And if we have all of us have some aspect which is less than we might be, they one time asked Michelangelo how he sculpted the David. And he said, all I did was chip away the parts that didn't belong.
Yeah.
In our work, as we work on our piece of art. We work on our sculpture. Our responsibility is to chip away the parts that don't belong. I think that it eases up the confusion that I'm sitting here across from you as a bag of wisdom. I come up here with the understanding that in order to see clearly, you have to find your blindness. In order to hear clearly, you have to listen for your deafness. In order to be wise, you have to go in pursuit of your ignorance. If I take those three states of mind as my work at hand, then I might have something to say.
Yeah. I think one of my favorite phrases, quotes that was actually given to me during those periods of lack of humility, it is best to begin in doubt and end in certainty than to begin in certainty and end in doubt.
Let's return this to prayer. Amen. Amen. I would say amen, my friend. I mean, my friend.
In moving on to our third topic, there's, I think, a great example, and I remember hearing this years ago, of an inventor by the name of Edison. And he was asked how many different versions of the light bulb did he create? How many times did he fail? You know, and actually it was like the 997th or something like that try that he got the light bulb to actually illuminate. And his response to that query was basically that I didn't fail. I just found 996 ways that it didn't work.
Yeah, let me tell you a story. Imagine that each of us in this lifetime has a cart. In this cart is everything that we know about ourselves, everything we've achieved, everything that we use to define ourselves. And to pull this cart, which is everything that is us, we have 10 horses. But we have 10 of these 10 horses, 9 of them are of fear, and 1 of the horses faith. Why? Because all of us have much more fear than we have faith in life. If we put up any of the horses of fear at the front of that wagon train, then we will hear our father saying, "You're a fool." We'll hear our first wife saying, "I told you never do it." You would hear our children, because Peter Ustinov said children sharpen their teeth on the bones of their parents. We'll hear our children saying, "You can't do that, Dad." If you put any of the horses of fear at the front of that wagon train, your cart is going nowhere. But if you put the one horse of faith at the front, the horses of fear will follow. Your fears will be fuel for your faith if you put your faith and not your fears in charge. An army of sheep led by a lion will defeat an army of lions led by a sheep.
Mm.
You know?
Mm. I find that... And I'm curious as to the people that you have associated with, come across in your travels, in your talks, and so forth. There are some folks who are willing to go out there. Some would even refer to them as the extremists. And I'm not referring to philosophy here. I'm talking about people who they're going to freehand rock climb. They're going to hang glide. They're going to jump in a car and go as fast as they can, maybe across the salt flats. They're going to climb Mount Everest. They're going to do whatever. One of the things that Robert Bly talks about in his book, Iron John, the daring do. They're going to find whatever daring do they can to just experience, as they perceive it, experience life. To get as much out of it as they possibly can.
But it's always in the particular vernacular of their life. That is, we may think that the great fear is to climb a rock wall with no restraint. It may be to drive a car at 300 miles an hour around a racetrack. But the number one fear in this country is public speaking.
Yes.
Right? Our fears only have the power we give them. Mm-hmm. The boogeyman behind the door in each of our lives is ourself.
Mm-hmm.
Courage is not the absence of fears, but how we wrestle with our fears. That is the deal. Yeah. In the Bible, Jacob wrestles with the angel of God, and because at the end of the night, he is not victorious or defeated, Jacob becomes Israel, which means he who wrestles with God because he has engage, the courage to wrestle with your fears in this lifetime. That is. So let's be straight that there is no one without fears. The question is, what are your fears and how do you choose, or do you have the courage to choose them? I remember many years ago, I was speaking to international executives on a cruise to Alaska. And one of the other people on the cruise was the guy that started REI. He was the first American to ever climb Everest. So we were talking and he said, boy, I got these people that send me notes and say, boy, I want to go mountain climbing with you. I have no fears whatsoever. And he looked at me and said, I would never climb with them. They'd get me killed. He said, it's only my fears that keep me safe. Yeah. Huh? It's the silence between the notes that makes the music.
Yeah.
Our fears are an ally to us. Our fears serve us as long as we put our faith and not our fears in charge.
Yeah. Have you reached a point in your life where you still have the nine, or will you always have the nine horses of fear and the one of faith? Is that always going to be the dynamic, or will there ever come a point where maybe you get to exchange one of the horses of fear for an additional, a second horse of faith, and a third, and so forth?
If the question within the question there is, are my fears diminished? Or is my faith enhanced as I've grown older? And the answer is both my faith and my fears have been enhanced across time. I've lived long enough and been broken, sometimes self-broken, enough to have all the fears that I could imagine in this lifetime that have me up staring at the ceiling at 3:45 in the morning.
Mm.
But as my fears have had the truth of being enhanced, so has my faith.
Yeah.
And so I would say that neither my fears nor my faith have diminished, but the wrestling has gotten more intense, you know. And in that regard, I think that is what finally, finalmente in Italian, allows me the dignity to be a voice with others. Because in my faith, in my fears, I am every man. Mm. I am every man. And any man that forgets that is less.
What this part of the country has gone through in the last, I'm going to say year, because we're actually coming up on an anniversary this July, where even I was directly impacted by a fire, where for the first time, and we've lived here 12 years, and we live up on the pass, up on the 154. And for the first time in 12 years, we had to leave our home. We were ordered to leave our home because we were in danger. And I think about that, and of course then of what happened in December and January, and a lot of people have chosen to get the heck out. They're not staying. They've left. But many people have chosen to stay in spite of the potential dangers. But from what I am gathering from what we are discussing, what we're talking about here and what you've shared, you can't escape those aspects of whether it's the natural world or otherwise, because that's just the nature of life.
Richard, I've lived here over 40 years in Santa Barbara. This past 4 months, my wife and I were evacuated 5 times. In this period of time, we lost very, very close friend and her son and another woman and her daughter. And I was the portador, the pallbearer to a family who lost 2 brothers who both woke up in ICU, one with all his ribs broken, one with his pelvis broken, and both woke up in ICU to learn they both lost a wife and a child. My experience out of this moment has been that in this lifetime, you can live feeling profoundly blessed, and I do, and profoundly sad simultaneously. Mm-hmm. And the challenge in this lifetime is to live fully in each of those moments simultaneously. The Taoists remind us that you walk down the path in life prepared for the worst evil to leap out at any moment and attack you. And you have to walk down the path in life prepared for the greatest joy to leap out at any moment and embrace you. And you have to walk down the path in life prepared for absolutely nothing to happen. And you have to walk down the path in life prepared for all three of these states concurrently. This is what it means to be an adult. This is what it means to be an adult.
Well, I know that for each one of us, we have our own experiences and stories through these types of incidents. And I remember thinking when it was happening, this doesn't, I've always felt as though I've always been in the right place at the right time. This doesn't seem to be the right place or the right time, and yet here I am. And so it's like, okay, either you are or you aren't. You're either in the right place at the right time or you're not. And so here I am communicating not only with you but other people and helping them to sort of have, I guess, a cathartic experience through sharing their stories, through getting it out so that they can hopefully move forward in some fashion to say, hey, you know, yeah, as you've just stated, you know, I'm grateful and at the same time fearful because we just don't know what's going to happen next.
A change is the only constant.
Yeah.
My friend, you know, when you said I would know what was going to happen, where this is only a moment.
Yeah.
There are no straight lines.
Yeah.
Every line is a curve. Over every finish line in life are the words, begin here, right?
Mm-hmm.
This lifetime, one of the great teachers said that this world is a very narrow bridge, but you shall not be afraid. I don't remember being fearful before I was born. I have no reason to bring fear to where I'm going beyond this lifetime. Consequently, I have no interest in trying to live this life on this narrow bridge. I shall not live my life afraid. Worry is the worst way to grow old. Perhaps that your experience with your wife in this fleeing from the fire was to give you an understanding of the vulnerability of life,
yeah,
which allows you to be a more honest witness in the work that you do in this lifetime. And the work that you will do in this lifetime is important because the smallest stone dropped in the widest sea will send radiating circles onto shores we will never know. So thank you for the work you're doing and lending your voice with the authenticity of a man who does not know and carries on.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the greatest things that I have learned is that I don't know what I don't know. And it's fascinating to age. I'm at 58 now, and I have to outlive my great-grandmother who died at 100. And at her age, 95, I was telling people I was going to outlive her, but she was making it really hard.
Richard.
So I've got 42 years to go, at least.
58. Spring training.
Yeah, well, that's what I hear.
You still have the majors ahead of you.
It's one of those things where we drive a Volvo, right? And they kept telling me they would ask me, so how many miles you got on that thing? And at the time, it was under 100,000. Oh, you haven't even broken it in. And that's kind of what they're saying now. It's, oh, 58, you're not even broken in yet. Wait till you get to your dad's age. He's 87, okay?
As they used to say in those old radio shows before my time, although somebody had said that Noah's a 2,000-year-old teacher temporarily inhabiting a younger man's body, but even then I wasn't remembering radio shows. As they said, stay tuned.
Yeah, absolutely.
Stay tuned.
That's what we want to do. I want to remind our listeners, we're talking with Noah Benchia. His website, noahbenchia.com. That's NOAHBENSHEA.com. And we're talking about Noah Bear as well. That's available on your website.
It's you can track it, but just Google Noah Bear.
Yeah.
You can go, you'll see the manufacturer and who's making it, how to get it. And there's a number of Noah Bears and you can hear all of them.
Yeah. And it's not an expensive bear, folks. It's a wonderful investment. What a gift to give a child or an adult for that matter.
Somebody going through a tough time.
Absolutely.
As we all have our.
And then we're looking forward to the release, the new release of Jacob the Baker Bread.
Yes.
Through Costco in particular, but probably through some other outlets as well. But we'll look for that in the coming months.
And keep an eye open for The Journey to Greatness with Noah Ben-Shea. On,
absolutely.
My mother always told me, don't forget the commercial. So I honor my mother on Mother's Day as her passing. So look at the dailyohm.com for The Journey to Greatness with Noah Ben-Shea. And if I might, my new book, We Are All Jacob's Children, will be out soon.
I like that. I like that. Before we let you go, and I it's been 9 years, so I think I have the ability to ask you these final three questions before we wrap up the program. And again, my thanks to you for spending so much time with us.
My thanks for you being you, Richard.
The first question for you is, who is Noah Ben-Shea?
Good guy trying to make a difference. Good guy trying to make a difference.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
My mission statement is to be a source of strength to others. My mission statement is to be a source of strength to others. I've had a lot of achievements, awards, honors, this, but when I ask myself really what's behind it all, my work is to be a source of strength to others.
And this answer may be the same for the final question. What is your life's purpose?
I think if you feel your life has been blessed, and I've come a long way in my life from a kid in Toronto, born on the other side of the tracks. If you feel your life has been blessed, that when you leave, you want to feel that the world's a little bit better place for you having been there. And that's my prayer. And prayer is a path where there is none.
Absolutely. Again, thank you, Noah Ben-Shea, for joining us on the program.
Thank you, folks.
A reminder, NoahBenshea.com, NoahBenshea.com.
Richard?
Yes.
I'm sorry. May
please.
I just say this?
Absolutely.
Since you asked me three questions, may I say to people who are listening, if I may offer a blessing on the way out?
Please.
May you who are listening, who are sharing this with others, may you go from strength to strength and be a source of strength to others. Peace and blessings.
Noah Ben-Shea, I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love Talal.